Troy is going to talk about miracles next Sunday. It'll be chapter 8.
He's not going to perform any. He's just going to talk.
But I heard he does magic tricks. Only a sister could ask.
Yes, I can.
We'll be in John Parsons' lovely home state of Arkansas. Yeah. Let's pray together. Father, we pray tonight that we will see your work in the moral laws that are written on our heart, and in such a compelling way that we will be able to help others see it too. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
I want to call your mind back to something that was said in the sermon a week ago Sunday about Colossians 4. I hope you will recall that one of the points we made in the lesson was the importance of knowing how to talk to unbelievers. That has been one of the themes running through this class. I need you to let your husband in. Actually, John is pretty well behaved in class. I'm okay with him coming in. Yeah, it's a lot. We're all good. And I said in the sermon that I think we need to be more curious about lost people. And as part of that, to pay more careful attention to what they say so we can understand where they are and talk to them more effectively. And that when we do, as Colossians says, we will make the most of the opportunity and we will speak with grace. And so I'm going to play you a video. The video is of an encounter between one of the guys who wrote our book for this class and a college student. And I play this when I teach this to the teenagers as well, in part because I want them to hear people from the world talk. Listen to what they say and be curious about it and see what we can learn about where they are so that we can reach them. So I'm going to play this video, and when I get done, I'm going to ask you a question. The kid in the video that Turek is having the conversation with, his name is Nathaniel, and so my question to him will be, does Nathaniel have any moral values? And if he does, what are they? Okay? Someone's at the door. I paused just for you. So remember, my question will be, does Nathaniel have any moral values? And if so, what are they? So watch the video.
Hello, I'm Nathaniel.
Nathaniel!
No, so you make three specific arguments for the existence of God. A creative argument, an argument for design, and an argument for morality. I first off would like to try and take down the argument on morality.
Go ahead.
Because it's not actually an argument for the existence of a God, it's the argument for the fact that we should have an idea of an existence of a God, because otherwise there would be no moral basis from which we could sit on. And I disagree with that because I feel that humans are inherently altruistic and moral.
Okay, all right, stop there for just a second, Nathaniel. What do you mean by altruistic and moral?
We are giving and we care about each other.
Why is that good?
Why is that good? Because it helps our species survive.
Why is it good to survive?
Because then we can propagate and move on as a species and continue to exist.
So why is that a good thing? Who said?
Why is that a good thing?
Yeah.
He felt the same way.
Because that is what is.
Well, that's an is. That's not an ought, though. Stalin would say, fine, Nathaniel, I'm going to survive by killing you and taking your stuff. Why is he wrong?
Because Stalin would have the initial urge not to. He would feel that the inherent urge of humans is to be caring for one another. There are situations where humans will not be caring about one another, and those are exceptional. But because humans are inherently altruistic, his first urge would be to take care of the person or try and help them. But if he has some motivation against that, then he would no longer have that urge, and he would decide that he wants to kill them because he has a reason to.
Well, again, I think you're begging the question as to what altruism is. Why is taking care of others a good thing if there is no God? That's your opinion. Is there an external referent, an authoritative, unchanging referent that you're getting that opinion from, which makes it objective, or is it just something you feel?
Humans, so if you take it from the stance that this is something that is consistent throughout humanity, that we care about one another, then we could superpose that as a moral impulse that we have.
Okay, let me agree with you. I think we do have a moral impulse, and that's exactly what C.S. Lewis said in The Abolition of Man, when he looked at all the diverse cultures and he said, they agree on basic morality. Now, how do you explain that basic morality? Well, there's maybe different ways to explain it, but some will say that's because God has written it on our hearts. But the issue isn't how we know it. The issue is, why is altruism, as you put it, or caring for one another, a good thing? Who said?
It's not necessarily that who said, it is what is. We are altruistic. There is no need for someone to say that it is a good thing. It is what we are.
But if Hitler or Stalin comes along and says, I don't want to be altruistic, I want to be selfish and take everything for myself, and if I have to kill you to do that, I'm going to do that, why is that objectively wrong?
Because he is not taking care of other people.
Who said is, where are you getting this standard to objective, this objective standard that you ought to take care of people? Where does that come from if there's no God?
So I'm just going to talk about a little example that I know of and some others. So there's three different points I'd like to make. First off, we still exist. If we did not take care of each other as a social species, we would have very, very limited capabilities of still existing. We need to band together. We need to take care of each other. We need to be friendly to
one another. That's presupposing that survival is a good thing. Why is it a good thing? And why us surviving? Why not roaches? Or antelope? Or black widow spiders?
Why do you need the concept of good there? We're still surviving, and we're being nice, kind to each other. We are being caring for one another.
Forgive me, Nathaniel, but you're stealing the standard of goodness from God's universe to try and make your worldview work. But if there is no objective, authoritative moral standard beyond us, then atheism doesn't work.
You know, I think you're right. There is something to that. The idea of good and evil is in a lot of ways a religious concept. But why do we need that?
Well, it depends on what you mean by religion. I'm just talking, you can leave religion out of it, it's a loaded term. Let's just say the source, ontologically, which means the study of being. Where does morality come from? Are you an atheist?
Yes.
Okay, are you a materialist?
No.
Okay, so you believe in immaterial reality, that's good. How do you explain immaterial reality if there is no God?
Could you define immaterial reality?
Oh, let's just take the laws of morality. It's right to take care of people. It's right to love. It's wrong to murder. Where does that come from?
That's something that is ingrained in us in our behaviors.
That's how we know it. And let me agree with you that maybe there are different ways we can come to know it. If evolution is true, maybe evolution has helped bring it to us. Maybe our parents taught it to us. Maybe society taught it to us. However, my question isn't how we know it. My question is, why is it right to love and wrong to murder objectively? Because, you know, we went to the Nazis and they said, oh, we're just obeying our government. We said, you had a higher obligation to obey the good rather than your government, and you failed, so you're guilty. So where does this higher standard come? Where does it come from? What is it ontologically?
So to some extent, this is an interpretation of, and I'm probably going to screw this up, but this is an interpretation of why we exist. And so we come from a long lineage of life. And so in order to honor that, we must continue to live. And so to be kind is to honor that life that we have. And life is all that we have.
Okay, okay. I agree with what you're saying here, but you're importing terms, moral terms, like honor and good, into an atheistic system that has no way to ground those moral terms. That's my point. Let me ask you another question. I'm going to ask you the question I said I would ask you. If Christianity were true, would you become a Christian?
Yes.
Great. If I give you a book, would you read it?
All right, we'll skip that part. So my question was, does Nathaniel have moral values?
Yes.
Do I agree with that? What are they?
Be good and kind.
One of his values is that we ought to be kind to each other. We ought to take care of each other.
Which would imply empathy in there somewhere.
Empathy, yes. What else?
We shouldn't kill each other.
Stalin was wrong for genocide. Hitler was wrong. We shouldn't be murdering people. Now, did you get the sense that these were just his opinions, or that he believed these were the rules for everybody? Everyone is supposed to live by these rules, right? So what is Turek trying to get him to see?
God.
Is Nathaniel missing? Yeah, you're three steps ahead.
where the concept of good actually came from.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where that's coming from.
Where the concept comes from?
The idea of being good and what's good. And because if there's a good, then there's a bad, right? Like, you've got to have the antithesis of that kind of one or the other. But he's unwilling to see that part of it. So Turek's pushing him to get to that other side of it. For every good, there's a bad, right?
You could see him struggling, right? Mm-hmm. There's a question that he's wrestling with there that he's not able to answer. Yes. Well, I thought your hand was up. Now I'm scared.
I would change concept to source, because he was talking about this thought and thought. It still has to come from a source.
Okay.
Who says good is good?
Who says? Right. Yes, Rick.
Well, he's not answering the question of he's saying good is designed into us without using the word design. It's just there. But he's not answering how it gets there.
Yeah. So I'm going to say something to you, and we're going to wrestle with this for the whole class, but it is the concept that I want you to see tonight. It's critical. And that is, morality has to be objectively grounded. We can't just say what right or wrong is. There has to be some reason that right is right and wrong is wrong. Otherwise, it's just my opinions. It's Apple or PC or Honda or Toyota. It's people's opinion. When it comes to our morality, what grounds it? What makes wrong wrong and right right? As you heard Turek say to him, who said so? Who said that it's right to be good? Who says it's wrong to commit murder? Where does that come from? How is it grounded? Now, for us as disciples, how do we do that? How do we ground morality? How do you know it's wrong to commit genocide?
God.
God's example doesn't have it in it. I mean,
okay.
It does, but not
from
us.
So I would go to Matthew 22, where the lawyer asks Jesus, what is the greatest commandment? And Jesus actually gives him two answers. What did he say? First commandment on the list, love the Lord your God. And the second, love your neighbor as yourself. So there's your problem with genocide, if you just want to get to the core of it. I'm supposed to love my neighbor, not wipe him out and take his stuff, right? It's in the Bible. So that's actually where we would go. We would say it's in the Bible. But there's something underneath that that grounds the morality taught in the Bible. What is it? Did I lose you with that one? Why is the morality in the Bible true and right?
It comes from God.
Because it comes, we believe, in Genesis, that says in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Verse 26, God made man in his own image. And as the creator, God has the right to make the rules and tell us what to do. It's not unlike what you have said to your children when you were tired of answering the why question and you told them to do something and fed up, you said?
Because I said so.
Who gives you the right? Bill Cosby said, brought you into the world, I can take you out and make another one just like you, right? Too soon to use a Bill Cosby example of it. But that is the it is the role of the creator to get to make the rules. If there is a God who made us, we are his, and he has a right to say, here's what I want you to do, here's what I don't want you to do. That is how our morality is grounded, right? Why does the atheist have a problem with this?
I'm raising my hand for real this time.
So the first one was fake. Okay, I'll pass on you since you've missed your, you've already got an opportunity to live yours. Go ahead.
So I had this question someone and then they tossed back at me, well, the Bible does in fact have genocide. What are you going to do with those histories of God wiping out entire civilizations? You know, David already saw, and then, you know, you didn't kill all these guys. Go kill all these guys.
Yep,
the question was, why was God's genocide okay and Hitler's not?
Okay, so great answer, great podcast on the website. I'm going to punt on that tonight if that's okay.
Sure.
Because we will move far afield from what I want to do in class. But Jeff and I actually spent an hour on that. It's on the website, it's a podcast. You can go back and listen to it. Mike, let me go back to the atheist. Why is this a problem for him, grounding morality?
Who's the source? Sure. If God's not a source, who's the source?
Okay, if there is no God, then what does the atheist have to ground his morality? This is Nathaniel's problem. This is why Nathaniel can't answer the question, because at the end of the day, without God, there is nothing to ground your morality on. Your view of right and wrong is what?
Your
opinion. There's no, he kept talking about that external referent, that higher source to which we appealed when we put the Nazis on trial. What is that if there is no God? Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's funny how well correlated to how everything came about, like what the previous lessons that we've been doing about how the world came, how we became to existence, all goes back to nothing for them. Something came from nothing. This is the same, like, foundation. Is that they keep digging, well, how to get here? Well, if there was no created construct, then it came from nothing. It's the same circle they're finding themselves in.
Yeah, so I'm glad you said that, because then I can throw the tree of life up here and say that this is their problem. Because we are great-grandchildren of pond slime people. So how do you even have a concept of morality? That we are moral is a rather odd thing, but what does one ground it in when that is our ancestry? You're the offspring of pond slime. Now listen, honest atheists will acknowledge that this is so. You know who I'm going to quote right now, don't you? Yes. We just need him to keep talking because he is so helpful. Richard Dawkins laid it on the line. Notice this statement. He said, the universe that we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is at the bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but pitiless indifference. You see it? He says it. If we're right about the universe, if the atheist is right about the universe, there is no such thing as right or wrong or purpose. There's nothing, right? So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that atheists can't be moral. That's often a misunderstanding. Atheists will push back and say, I know some atheists that are more moral than some Christians I know. And that's true. But that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about, are you able to behave? Lots of atheists behave really well. The issue is, why do you behave that way? And by what standard will you call upon others to behave well like you do? What if I don't want to? What if you're my neighbor and I've got a bigger gun and I can kill you and take your stuff? What's the objection? Yeah.
I mean, he kept saying that it's something that's ingrained in us, and if we are just descended from pond scum, then why is it just us? Why is it just humans that have that ingrained and not all the other animals? Because I don't think anyone would argue that other animals are moral. I mean, they just Or maybe some would.
We have dog people in the class. I've already been in trouble, just warning you about
it. I've got dogs, but I know he's not moral.
It is interesting. That a dog bites somebody. And we don't put them on trial.
That was a long time ago.
Right? Why not?
Because he's
going to
die anyway.
Well, it's not moral, right? He's just doing instinctively what dogs do. We may put a dog down, but it isn't his punishment. Why do we do that? So it can bite somebody else, right? It's not punishment. You're right in saying that humans are unique. And so there's a whole path to run about how we would even, you know, the descendants of Ponceline came to be moral. It's a curious thing. More importantly, I think there is a wonderful opportunity here to talk to your friends and make a case for the existence of God. Classically, this is known as the moral argument for God. And I will tell you that as we continue to live in an increasingly chaotic world, like Jeff talked about today, there are some wonderful opportunities to argue for God using this argument. So I would invite you, we're not going to have nearly enough time to cover this in class. Go back to the chapter, really think about this. My main objective is hopefully to show you how to use this when you talk to your friends, because I have found it to be a compelling argument. So the argument goes something like this. If God does not exist, then objective moral values and duties do not exist. Okay? But number two, objective morals and values do exist. So, if that's so, then God must exist. Let's work on these first two premises. Is it true that if there is no God, there are no objective morals? Is that true?
Yes,
that's the point, actually, that Richard Dawkins makes. I picked this grim-faced picture of him because I thought it would fit the rather pitiful statement that he makes here. So actually, you could settle the issue with everyone by saying the most famous atheist in the entire world admits that without God, there is no good or evil. But I actually really like the tack that Turek is taking in his conversation with Nathaniel. How does he get Nathaniel to see that?
He asked him like four different ways, and the answer was God every time. And he asked it.
What did he ask?
Ways, but, and he was struggling with it because he knew the answer.
What did you say?
The source. What's his source?
Turek. And listen, you can get online, and there's a whole collection on YouTube of Turek speaking on college campuses. And I promise you, after you watch a dozen of them, you'll find out this guy doesn't have anything new. He does the same thing every time. So I got another video that I sometimes show the kids in the class where some kid's getting up and he's railing against God. Oh, God killed people, he approved of rape and slavery, and how can you serve a God that's like that? And Turek will go, so you think rape is wrong? And the kid goes, yeah? What makes it wrong? And he goes down the same path again, just like you saw with Nathaniel. Why is it wrong? Who said so? Pressing for the same thing, what is the objective ground for your values? And if you remove God for the picture, there isn't one. And so that's why you saw Nathaniel scrambling all over the place. In fact, it was really beautiful. At one point he said, well, you kind of have a point there. Because there just wasn't anything left to say. Now, I will tell you that one of the reasons I really came to embrace this and value it is because I used it on my son. So very early on when we started talking, my son is a fierce moralist. He has deeply seated ideas about right and wrong. Even though he's had periods where he wasn't sure God existed, he still believed certain things are absolutely right and wrong. And any time he would mention that, I would say, so you think that's wrong? Yeah? Why? Well, you know, you shouldn't insult people and be mean to them. So you think that's wrong? Of course. Well, why is that wrong? Who said it was wrong? And we did that often enough that by now, years later, when he brings up a moral objection to something, and I say, what makes that wrong? He's like, okay, we don't have to go through the whole thing. I get it. But this is a huge, huge problem for unbelievers. They don't have moral ground for their values. Now, be nice about this, okay? This isn't a gotcha moment. This is, I want you to see the consequences of your position. So watch Turek work that. So you believe this is wrong. Tell me why that's wrong. Who said that's wrong? Why does that rule apply to everybody? Now, if you pay attention, actually, unbelievers say this all the time. If you think about the statements they make, when someone says, everyone has a right to live any way they want to. Ever heard somebody say something like that? Well, why is that? What's underneath that?
They want to do whatever.
I'm sorry?
They want to do whatever.
They want to do whatever, but how can they argue that I have a right to live any way I want to? That assumes what?
Well, you used to hear people say it's my God-given right. That's what you used to hear people say.
That's a different direction with the problem. But underneath that is this idea that there aren't any rules for everybody, right? When people say, you have no right to judge how I live my life. Heard that before? What does that mean? There's no objective referent that we're all accountable to, that we have to live by. You can't force your religious views on me. By the way, that's just a dumb one. I don't know of any Christian armies that are running around with guns compelling people to live a certain way to you. And the fact that I tell you I don't approve the way you're living, I mean, who hasn't heard that from their parents at some point in their life? That's not forcing you to live a certain way. That's just telling you I'm not happy with the choice you make. But this idea that nobody can force their religious views on me, because there are no laws, no rules that everybody has to live by. And so going back to the argument, I think that everyone recognizes that if you don't have God, you don't have objective moral values, right? So we can agree on that. So that brings us to the second premise, and that is, do objective moral values exist? You know what's odd about that? Everybody believes that. Hear me on this. Everybody believes the second premise. Everybody believes that objective moral values exist. Would you be surprised if I told you that even the very popular atheist Bill Maher believes in objective moral values? I know you're looking suspiciously at me, so of course I brought a video. So listen to Bill Maher. My question will be, what are his objective moral values? Listen for it.
What's really disturbing about Noah isn't the silly. It's that it's immoral. It's about a psychotic mass murderer who gets away with it, and his name is God. Genesis says God was so angry with himself for screwing up when he made mankind so flawed, that he sent the flood to kill everyone. Everyone. Men, women, children, babies. What kind of tyrant punishes everyone just to get back at the few he's mad at?
So Bill Maher calls God a tyrant, and he suggests that murdering people is immoral. Where is Bill Maher, an atheist, getting a moral standard from? I mean, if there is no God, if we're just all molecules in motion, then there is no such thing as a moral law. So Bill Maher is actually stealing from God in order to argue against it. He's stealing a moral standard from God, and he's saying God is immoral. In other words, he has to sit in God's lap to slap his face.
Okay. So, what are Bill Maher's moral values? I didn't ask you to agree with them. I just want you to identify what they are.
Don't kill her.
God is a genocidal maniac for sending the flood. God was wrong for sending the flood. See it? Morally wrong to do that. What other moral values does he have?
Can't kill.
killing babies is bad.
Only if God does it.
Yes.
Yes. Can't take vengeance, punishment.
Doesn't believe in justice.
Sorry?
Doesn't believe in justice.
Does he?
No.
What did he say about abortion?
Kill babies as well.
He didn't say that. What did Mars say about abortion?
It's a woman's right.
It's a woman's moral right. And it's wrong for the government to prevent a woman from getting an abortion. So the atheist Bill Maher believes in objective moral value. You think about that. There are rules that everybody ought to keep. A woman should be able to get an abortion. That's a moral right, and everybody ought to follow that rule and adhere to that rule. What God did was evil and wrong, and that's never right. Nobody should ever do that. All I'm trying to demonstrate to you is that atheists believe premise number two. Objective morals do exist. In fact, the interesting thing is, guys, atheists are all over the map on this issue. I want to illustrate that for you with a very common point of controversy when we talk to people in our culture. I want you to take the example of gay marriage or just homosexuality in general, okay? You have probably heard someone say at some point, you cannot say that homosexuality is wrong or gay marriage is wrong. And some people say, you can't say that because there is no absolute right or wrong, or you can't enforce your religious values on me, something like that, right? Heard people say things like that? You with me? I have also heard unbelievers say this, you are wrong for condemning gay marriage or homosexuality. So my question is, if you will look at those statements that we have both heard from people in culture, I'm wondering, do you see a problem?
Manipulation of words.
Sorry?
Manipulation of words.
Yeah.
They're absolutely sure there's no absolutes.
Okay, so watch this. In the first statement, there is no absolute wrong, right?
But you are wrong.
Thank you. But you are wrong for saying we're wrong. What's that called?
Contradiction.
A contradiction. It's logically flawed. It doesn't agree with logic and reason. Therefore, it is untrue, right? You see that? People say things like this in culture all the time. Things that are not, like my favorite one, don't judge me. You have no right to judge. As they judge me, right? See the problem? Over and over again. Here's the only point I want you to see. Anytime an unbeliever argues that any behavior is wrong, he's proving the second premise of the argument. Oops. I didn't want that one yet. Don't look at that slide. Oh, why did I do that? Because now I've got to click through all these again. Just ignore this. Ignore this. It's interesting that even Richard Dawkins believes that lots of things are wrong. Dawkins has said that if you teach your child that evolution is wrong, you are guilty of child abuse. Dawkins actually has come up with his own list of 10 commandments. Modified list for how we're supposed to live life. Yeah, he believes that things are absolutely right and absolutely wrong too. Everyone does. Here's my question for you. The book says that we will know moral laws exist not by watching what people do, but by seeing how people react. Did y'all read that? And if so, what does that mean?
Point of view or perspective of which they're looking at.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, sir.
One of the examples that he gave was individuals saying, well, it's about stealing. It's all right to you may not have a problem with the stealing until somebody steals from you. So
you can't always tell people are moral by how they behave. because we don't always behave consistently with our morals, as every one of us in this room knows. We've all done something that we knew to be wrong, and we still did it anyway, right? So, never.
No. Ask her.
The marriage class is later. But you can see people's morality in the way they react to the way to others' treatment of them. Really simple illustration of that. Now this picture, you're in line for a ride at one of these places that billions of people go. And you're waiting for hours for this 92-second ride. Why y'all like that is a great mystery to me. And all of a sudden, somebody goes right up to the front and breaks in line and cuts in front of all of you. What do you feel?
Rage.
Look, I am sympathetic because when I'm in a 10-item line, I'm counting, right?
How do you like that?
I'm counting. Yes, yes, absolutely. So I want you to think, we would notice that, and we would not be happy about it some more than others. But why?
Well, it's a cut and chat.
Sorry?
It's a cut and chat.
But why do we feel rage at that moment?
Because we follow the rules.
Not fair.
Fair.
And maybe they don't have a rule against line cutting.
That's
yeah,
what
there's gonna be. Here's a cool thing about that. We do this all the time. We operate like there's this unwritten set of rules out there that everyone is supposed to honor and know about and keep. That's why we immediately get mad. We don't know anything about that person, their circumstances, how they were raised, their upbringing, but they know there's a rule about cutting in line and you're not supposed to do that. And you know what the weird thing is? Do know that. Everybody knows. Yeah, everybody knows that you're not supposed to cut in line. So think about that. There is this, we have this inborn sense of what good behavior looks like. Go ahead, John, you had your hand up.
Oh, I was just going to say that if I was cutting in line, I'd say the first will be last and the last
will be last. Bible their way and shut this down. I'll tell you what I think is interesting. Is I've had unbelievers push back and say, yeah, but you know, those guys on death row, they don't have any morality at all. And of course, my question is, have you ever talked to anybody on death row? Because I have.
Just watch documentaries.
Yep. And they do.
They do. They still have a sense of, like, that's why, like, pedophiles get killed in prison, because that's something that these other murderers, like,
you
don't
do. You
do
this bad thing,
right.
You can't do that
right.
Bad thing. Listen, steal their cigarettes.
I've seen every episode of Dateline, like, I know, right?
Steal their cigarettes, and they will tell you how awful it is that someone stole. Or listen, I have sat and listened for hours as an inmate raged against the justice system and its inequities, at least in their case. There is a moral sensibility there. And so think about where that leaves us. This is really, really important. Everyone knows that objective moral values exist. And backing up, the first premise was, you can't have them without God. And so where does that lead us? God has to exist. It is a compelling argument. Particularly in our crazy world where people want folks to behave, it's an opportunity to say, you can only get good behavior with God. Otherwise, you don't even have a right to be griping, because there's nobody with the right to make the rules for everybody. Does that make sense? Do y'all follow that? Anybody have a question or comment on that fundamental idea?
I mean, that's one of the problems. It's not necessarily objective morality, it's subjective morality. The communist in China believes they're doing the right thing when they execute the dissidents or attacking against them, because they are there to protect the system. So their subjective moral, of course, objectively, we know that's wrong, but they see it as their right because it's a subjective moral value. And that's the whole world today. It has been since the beginning.
Yeah, that's The problem with that is that while that may be true, we don't treat it like it's subjective. We behave like there are these rules, the line cutting rule, and it doesn't matter if you're from China or from Wisconsin or New York City, you don't come to Texas and cut the line, right? Because everybody knows the rule. Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to read part 175 that says, the moral law is not always the standard by which we treat others, but it is nearly always the standard by which we expect others to treat us. We may not follow,
that
but we
expect... That almost sounds biblical, doesn't it?
We expect it to you to treat me well, but I may not have to treat you too well.
Exactly. There are a couple of pushbacks that I want to address before we run out of time. Attempts by unbelievers to explain morality without God. Sometimes they will say, well, we just have morality because it's what we were taught by our parents. We just learned it growing up. And that's where morality comes from. You just learn it from your parents. How would you respond to someone who said that? It's just what we learned from our parents.
Where they learned it.
Yeah. First of all, it's not really an answer. It's sort of like the alien answer for the beginning of life. I'm just pushing the problem back a generation. The other thing that I would say is it isn't really about grounding morality. They're talking about where our morality came from. I will admit that I was taught morality from my mom and dad. That's not really the point. The question is, why are these moral principles true? Not who taught it to me or how I came to learn it, but why are these the rules and why should anybody live from them? So that really doesn't address that question at all. The second thing that unbelievers will argue is that morality is simply a product of our evolution. So for example, they would say, take the caveman, back when we looked a little more like monkeys than we do today. He's enjoying some beast that he has killed with some of his friends and getting some of the food, but one of his buddies takes more than his fair share, and so he takes a club and he beats the guy to death and takes him out, right? Because that's just what they did. But then he realizes on the next hunt it's harder because we killed Joe. And so they begin to discover this idea that community is important, and if we kill Joe, we don't have anyone to help us hunt the next time. And so through evolution, they came to learn that killing was bad and community was good. And so some would say morals are just a product of our evolution. How would you respond to that?
Well, first of all, how do you know fair share of what? I mean, because there's some moral subjectivity or objectivity there.
Turek has another book called Stealing from God, and that is exactly... Remember the reason we live in a moral country, folks? Because all these crazy people who don't know where, when they get up in the morning, whether they were a boy or a girl, grew up with parents who taught them something about the Lord and the Bible, and that's why we have the values that we have. You know, it's just stealing what God put there anyway.
You could almost just kind of roll with that and go, okay, so if morals come from evolution, just throw back to the previous lessons and throw back, then tell me about evolution a little bit, and then go to there and go back to God from that point.
Yeah, the problem is that evolution actually hurts them. It doesn't help them. If we just evolved this, why should I feel compelled to keep it? Who knows what moral values we will evolve next time, right? In 1,000 years, they may be completely different. And so morals then are relative. It's just where we are in the current state of evolution. Yes, sir.
And it goes against one of the primary precepts of evolution, survival of the fittest.
How so?
Survival of the fittest means you can't be altruistic against somebody that's disabled, somebody that's not as strong as you. They must be taken out to survive, to prove the species.
Yeah. I think that actually our morals are in conflict with the tenets of evolution. I mean, that sounds good, you know, the story of killing Joe.
But when Joe got too old to help with the hunt, they still had to feed him.
Well, the interesting thing is, it doesn't account for when our morals go against the survival instinct. Because that's why you don't kill Joe. You need Joe's help so you can survive, right? So then survival is the thing. Even Nathaniel said, survival of the species is the thing, then why do our morals teach us to do things that work against our survival? Think about it. You were out at the park this summer by a fast-moving river, and a child fell in and was drowning. What moral impulse would you feel at that moment?
Jump in. Jump in.
How many would, sitting here right now, would jump up and rush to the river and jump in?
I think without even thinking. Maybe younger generations are just in
the So, wait a minute.
Someone help.
Wait a minute. What risk are you taking by jumping into a fast-moving river?
Death and dying. You're risking your life.
You are risking your own life. In fact, this true story, where I used to live up in Chicago, this exact thing happened. This isn't a made-up story. Child fell in the river, was drowning. Three family members rushed into the river to try to save the child. They all drowned. All. So one impulse is jump in the river to save the child. Even as you're running, you may be thinking, that river's moving fast. I could drown. But interestingly, there is a third impulse, C.S. Lewis talks about, that you feel in that moment. Which is what? Anybody know?
Survive. Save yourself.
That's the second. Oh. There's a third impulse that influences what we do in that moment.
Your
favorite?
Yes.
Oh, what should I do?
Yes. Ought. I need to go save that child. I might drown if I do, but there's a third that impulse that says, but it is right to save the child. You know how I know that's true? What if you stood on the bank and did nothing and watched the child drown?
Guilty.
Why would you feel guilty? You survived.
Because you could have tried. Because what if you did?
There is something within us that says, even if it means I die, the right thing is to jump in and save the child. You see my point? And so what is that third impulse, that moral law within us? And so it doesn't work to say we evolve this, because sometimes our moral values are counterintuitive, like a parent with very little food during famine who feeds the child and not themselves. Doesn't work, does it?
Yes, ma'am. I have to ask this. Do you think everybody has the third?
Yes. Yes, the problem is we mess with it.
Okay, because I have to tell you, I think I know some people who don't have the third.
Well, okay, remember, come back after we meet outside. We're going to have the marriage class. So remember,
where's the third choice?
Is it 1 Timothy 4? You taught 1 Timothy 4, didn't you? Our Timothy class, where it talks about those who've seared their conscience with a brain. I remember, the instincts can be there, but they can also be warped and scarred, and our ability to see, right, can be affected by that. So I think everybody has it, but I do think we can mess it up along the way. Does that make sense? And so here's the question to wrestle with. How do the descendants of Ponsorn come to all possess this moral impulse? Everybody. Yes, ma'am.
Can we argue that it's part of the design, you know, stamped out?
Oh, I think it is. I think, in fact...
That's what I meant by the third, whether they have it or not.
Yeah. The fact that it is universal, and listen, this is a curious thing about it. It isn't just that everybody has it. It's that all of our moral codes are actually really similar to each other. We don't see that because we focus on the micro. If you get back on the macro, there is not a country to build statues to celebrate the guys who ran away from the battle. Okay? And I know in some cultures you can have one wife, in other cultures you can have two or three wives. There isn't a culture anywhere on the planet where a guy can just have any woman he chooses to have. Right? It's interesting that across cultures, moral values, big picture, are actually very similar to each other. And we all have this sense that everyone ought to keep the rules. Where did that come from? I do think it's part of the design that God is. We are made in His image, and part of that is possessing that sense of morality. Hope that's helpful, especially in talking to folks today in this crazy world. Moral argument, I think, is compelling. Thank you. Miracles next week, chapter 8.